Blog Talk Radio.
Sidekick Publications is the newest place for all your martial arts informational needs. My Karate, Introduction to American Wadaru, Martial Arts Guide to Success, History of Japanese Martial Arts, Taizanru Taiho Jitsu, and the new Martial Directory. With martial art master instructors like Michael DePasquale Jr., Joe Miller, Alan Woodman, and many more. Everything for martial arts enthusiasts, techniques, shiatsu, history, all in one place. Available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble's, and bookstores near you. Also available on digital downloads for Kindle and ebook readers. Visit our website at www.sidekickpublication.com and order your books today. Remember, Sidekick Publications, all the action you can read.
Experience the history, beauty, culture, and tradition of the martial arts at the world's first Martial Arts History Museum. Located in the city of Burbank, California, visitors will enjoy learning how Asian history became part of American history. For more information, visit our website at mamuseum.com. Presented by the Martial Arts History Museum is our first celebrity charity seminar series. On February 24th, you will have the opportunity to work out with such great superstars as Bill Ryusaki, Art Camacho, Leo Fong, Adam James, and Michael Matsuda, all in the same day. For more information, visit our website at mamuseum.com.
Thank you for that, Michael Matsuda. Welcome to the program, Martial Arts Talk Radio. I'm your host, Danny Vena. Today is Thursday, January 24, 2013. We're broadcasting live from Wake Forest, North Carolina. Our first shout-out tonight goes to Sidekick Talk Radio with Shihan Allen Woodman, the host, and his co-host, Renchi Timmy Presk, with MMA Corner. You can tune in every Wednesday at 12 noon, every Sunday at 6 p.m. for 2 hours each show. And to speak to the host, you can dial 347-237-4818. Now, we've been asking for those bios, trying to collect 500 names from masters around the world to go into the book that Sidekick Publications is working on just now. So to submit those bios, high-resolution photographs, and contact information, you can use Sensei Alan Woodman at yahoo.com or send it right to the publication company, which is Sidekick Publications at yahoo.com. Dana Stamos has listed all of the blog talk radio hosts on her site, worldwidedojo.com. So if you want to listen to any of the episodes, you can certainly stop by the site and listen to all of the different hosts that offer an insight as to what's going on in martial arts and speaking about their seniors and their dojos. And that's on docradio.net. And they have a lineup from Tuesday night, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Tonight's show was with Professor Tom Curry. The show started at 6 p.m. I did call in. Their topic tonight was gun control. So it was very interesting. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday nights at all different times, you have a whole host of people working together, and it's just a wonderful community that they're building, and also awareness and some great topics. Now, the next thing that we wanted to talk about tonight was, it's something that we have been promoting on the show, and that is dojo etiquette and some of the terms that people use in that environment. Now, when you get young students, and when I'm, when I say young, I mean like, the little ones, the under 12 years old, let me put it that way, they tend to ask why do I have to call you that? Or what does that mean? So whatever title you use in the dojo, nine chances out of ten, the young ones probably won't know what it means. So they ask questions. And obviously sensei is one of the call-outs that you would use in a dojo environment. Now, all depending on how well you know that dojo and how long you've been attending there, you would know that when they have other dons on the deck, some of them have different ranks. So different ranks come with different designations. So one of the posts that I put out today on Facebook had to do with some terms that we commonly use in the dojo. One of the things is the name, what you're practicing. Now, our style happens to be Ishinru. So when you say the word dojo, or you say the word sensei, or you say the word, you know, karate, most people have their own interpretation of what that means. Now, if they are a karateka, then they probably have been given some type of document that would indicate what these terms mean. I know that it was one of the first things that I got when I went to my first lesson, along with a copy of the Karate Dojo from O-Sensei Peter Urban. So the word, you know, karate, when the little ones come in and they say, I want to learn how to take karate, okay? So from that one word, you know, we try to explain to them what that means. They get it, but yet, you know, they don't fully understand it. When you say karate do, it's the same word, only with D-O at the end. And now you're going to, you know, mention the word traditional way of karate. So just in those two words, there are multiple explanations of what they mean. You know, the fact that you have young students coming in and you're going to teach them something that is a foreign language, and the translation between what it means and what they think it means are two different things until you get them on the same track. That's why dojo, you know, some may say it's a gym, or it's a school, or it's a place, you know, where karate is taught. So, you know, again, when you get into, you know, going to a dojo and learning some of the, or hearing some of the terms that are being mentioned, if you don't ask questions, or if you don't, you know, study the information that they gave you when you went to the dojo, you probably won't know what these terms really mean. You may know the basic translation of them, but again, like the techniques have multiple levels to them, and all depending on how well you practice, you know, will determine whether or not you really learn or not. Now, the titles in the dojo, such as, you know, sensei. Sensei is a karate instructor, someone who teaches that style of karate on the deck. That's the sensei. So it's usually a person holding the rank of black belt, and usually comes with, you know, a third or a fourth degree ranking dan to be a sensei, to be able to teach your style on your own without the supervision of your sensei on the deck, present. So, you know, being a shodan and working for sensei teaching helps sensei, obviously. You have certain things that you are learning yourself now how to teach. When you become a second dan, of course, you know, you're working towards becoming an instructor. You're learning all of the curriculum and how it's, you know, supposed to be taught. And you're doing it in front of sensei so that sensei knows that when you do go on your own, that you will continue to do it in that fashion. Now, all depending on your dojo and what your rules are in your dojo, you may call a shodan sensei because he's wearing a black belt. He or she is wearing a black belt. So, not to say that the you know, the call out for that rank is not appropriate. It's just that how do you, in your dojo, handle it? How do you designate who you call sensei and, you know, who you would consider to be the teacher? Now, going to a dojo on a regular basis, if they do have first, second, and third degree black belts teaching, usually the third degree black belt is designated by something. In our class, they allow us to wear a black jacket with black trim on our pant leg. If the students have questions, they're always designated to the highest ranking black belt on the deck. Now, if the highest ranking black belt wants to pass that question on to the helping instructors on the deck, well, then that's the right of the highest ranking don on the deck. Maybe he wants to see, he or she wants to see how you answer that question. Because it's all about trying to keep continuity between what we got and what we're giving. So, you know, the critical path with the title means something in the dojo. It's not that you wave your flag saying, look at me, look at me. What it is that sensei has allowed you to operate under that level of instruction based on his trust for how you're going to teach that art. So because titles and rank all play out a specific role in your dojo. Now, when you go out into the world, what are you referred to as? Well, there are a lot of different designations, whether they be, you know, from either Japan or China or other areas around the globe that have titles for martial arts skilled people, such as Sifu. So, let's put it this way. Rank and titles basically come down to the designation of the headmaster of that dojo, of that lineage. So the post that I put up on Facebook today got some great responses. I can tell you this, that some of my seniors in the business have commented some real quality comments. Why? Because it has to do with, as you grow in the martial arts, you grow in a way that allows you to make progress not only in the curriculum, but also in the teaching of that curriculum. So even to the way you tie your OB and how you're referred to and looked at within the community, if you're considered to be a warrior, if you're considered to be a true karateka, or a practitioner of any discipline, in your community, they recognize you based on what you did in that journey along the way. You obviously have proven to the people that are around you your value and your worth to the community. So the titles that they use designate that level of achievement. Now, one of the things that we call our soke is soke. Tatsuo Shimabuku is the founder of the Ishinru system, and when we refer to him, we may call him master, we may call him soke, we may call him founder, we may call him o-sensei, we may have some special designations for him, because he is the originator of a style, a true originator of a style of karate do. So, what is the proper title for him? I mean, Shihan, master, grandmaster, master of grandmasters. I mean, he's the founder. So, in our style, there's no one above Tatsuo Shimabuku Sensei because he's our founder. Now, he has senseis. He has people that he studied under that I'm sure he referred to as whatever term was appropriate on the island. Well, let's see. This might be Daryl Sargent here. Yes.
Hey, Ash, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I was on the program tonight. I called into Doc Talk Radio. I was on the program with Professor Curry.
Oh, okay, good.
And his topic tonight was gun control.
Okay.
Wow. Wow, that was really something. Because that's sure. A hot topic, you know, in this country, after what happened to these kids up in Connecticut. I was just talking about, you know, terminology that we... here when we go into the dojo, when we go into the place where we work out, there are many names that you use to refer to dojo, gym, and there are so many other terms that refer to the place where you go to work out. And then when you go to that place, you may hear some words that are foreign to you that you don't understand, such as sensei. And then, you know, based on the instructors that are there, in your case, you know, you're the inheritor of a system. So, you know, the term grandmaster is how you're referred to as in that regard. Now, you hold other titles within the martial arts disciplines. So, you know, just if you would, take a second to just share with us how you in different areas when you visit different dojos, you must be referred to, in some cases, as a different title. So that's a key topic for our show tonight, because we were trying to understand, you know, in our case, we call Soge Tatsuo Shimabuku. He's our Soge. He's the founder of our system. He's our Grand Master. I never met him, so I never had the opportunity, you know, to address him face to face. So I wouldn't call him anything else other than Soge, because that's all that I know. But now, key question, when you, let's say, go to a karate dojo, or if you go to an Eskrima dojo, or any of the other disciplines that you're ranked in, how does that work?
Usually everybody just calls me professor. And, you know, because of the levels that I have in particular systems, if they want to call me by a Japanese title, they'll call me either Kiyoshi or something else. Basically, Kiyoshi is the what they would deem as the wording for professor, teacher of teachers. So for the most part, you'll find that the majority of people will call me either professor or maybe Kiyoshi or something like that. The grandmaster thing, I'm getting used to. I really wasn't really too much on taking that, but others are referring to me as that because, for the most part, I don't think anybody hears me refer to myself as that. And so if it comes from others and if it comes from people, a constituency that has a high level of respect for you, then, you know, it's fine. But for the most part, I don't think most people will hear me refer to myself as that.
Well, as you said now, the title Kiyoshi, when you walk into a dojo and they refer to you as a Kiyoshi, to them, they must have an understanding of what that means. So, you know, how do you explain this, you know, to a child? Some of the kids that come, we've been getting visitors, such as a Professor Cates, and he, you know, the same thing. His background, he's the founder of a system. So, when we refer to him, we refer to him as, you know, professor. Now, just to clarify, what do you prefer?
usually it doesn't really matter. Professor is the easier thing to deal with than the grandmaster thing. The grandmaster title has a lot of different connotations, some good, some bad. Even when you deal with the title of professor in America, you have those who would say it's not an appropriate title because it's not used in an academia fashion. And then you'll have some that say, well, it's been used in a martial art fashion for so long that right now it is what it is. People use it and we just move on. So really it doesn't matter. If they call me grandmaster, I accept it. If they call me professor, it ain't that serious.
Right.
At least. I'm
all right, then let me clarify something then. In the dojo, because if they call me sensei, that's been my title, you know, since I became an instructor, you know, for my teacher. So sensei is what they've called me for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I accept that as my title in my dojo. So that's where it really counts, is you know, where you're teaching your style or your discipline. Outside of that, and that was another part of what I posted today, outside of your dojo, if I didn't know what, you know, or how to address you, I would first ask, how do I address you? So that when I introduce you to the class, I do it right. In the classroom, in the dojo, is really, you know, where that all comes from. Because outside of the dojo, it really doesn't matter.
your family, your lineage is what matters, and that the people that refer to you as sensei or how about the term Shihan? Now, they tell me that when you're a Shihan, that means that you have elevated your level of instruction to several generations deep now. You are now the teacher of teachers in your line when they call you Shihan. So it's a very, like, serious title. Now, that's what you would want, you know, the young ones to understand when you, you know, when they hear you refer to somebody as a Shihan. They have no clue because, you know, they haven't done their homework. They haven't been around it. But the, you know, that term was always very special to me because they called certain people Shihan when I was coming up in the ranks. So when I heard that word, I know, you know, I knew right away that's like, wow. You know, when they call you that, you've really achieved some great things.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you know, I think that as long as it stems from your peers, then you deal with the title that they refer to you by, whichever one they feel comfortable, especially if those people are truly people that you know, respect, and that know where you are in the arts and where you've been. So really, again, I mean, in my school, the kids call me professor. I just don't, you know, get into all the grandmaster thing, but that's what they call me. They call me professor, and I'm comfortable with it. I'm fine with it, and, you know, we just move on.
With the opportunity to teach the kids, like, some of these terms, you know, we were going over them today. Like, obviously, we count, you know, the way I was taught. So, you know, I wasn't allowed to do that at home. If my father heard me, you know, counting the way I was taught, he didn't approve of that. My
uh-huh.
father, he didn't approve of me wearing a gi.
Uh-huh.
He did not. And then to know that I was told to wear the gi by my father-in-law,
uh-huh.
that didn't go over very well with him either.
Uh-huh.
My father went through World War II, you know, so
right.
he had his own reasons for not wanting me to practice any type of Oriental art. He didn't believe in it. So, you know, when I started to hear these terms, I wasn't really very good at the pronunciation of them, so I had to practice. And then, you know, when you start to put words together and use them in class and give instruction, you know, they have to understand what you're asking for. So I did practice learning how to speak, you know, asking for certain techniques. I just think that that's something, if you want to share with the students and they're receptive, you know, to want to learn it, they will. In my case, I had to, you know, do it based on asking questions. And, you know, that's the key of getting them to open up to you. Ask questions. So when they come to the class and you give them this booklet, and then they come back, you would expect them to say, what is all of this? And you start to explain it to them. Everybody gets wrapped up in rank and titles. Outside the dojo, it doesn't matter. Inside the dojo, it does. because that's how you respect one another. You start as a Q and you work your way up to a Don. And then, all depending on how long you stay with the style, you should make progress if you're active. And you should work out. That's another thing that we, you know, stress. Just because you have a title or you have rank doesn't exclude you from working out. And I believe we had two or three shows where you had also made your comments about that. So that basically wraps up the show for tonight. But I'm glad that you called in because, you know, the kids should know what's required of them and how to behave. Are they willing to learn something outside of what they normally do? Well, that's up to the student. I can't make them learn it, but I can give them the information, and if they ask questions, help them through it. And then you see if they show interest. If they show interest, then great.
Understood. Understood. And at least give them the foundation of it.
Give them the opportunity, you know.
Right.
And then I know that they basically ended the show now, but I was also going to ask about the belts and how the belts work. Obviously, you know, when you get to a certain level, you're allowed to change the color of your black obi now. So at what level do different, you know, styles allow you to do that? And then what is appropriate? Well, we wear a black obi up until we get fifth dan. After fifth dan, they allow you to wear the red and white obi, where the spaces are equal. The red is equal to the white. And then as you get from there, the obi then goes to red, all red. Ninth and tenth dan is all red. So they ask about that. When certain visitors come, they see, oh boy, he's wearing a red obi. He's wearing a red and white one. And they ask questions about that. So again, you know, what you wear, you know, around your waist, I know that the little ones look at that, and they, like, you know, their eyes get big, because then they figure, uh-oh, you know, what does that mean now? So that's going to be the topic of our next show, because the red and white obi, I don't know how others do it, but we go up to eighth dan with a red and white obi. And then ninth dan goes solid red, and tenth dan is also solid red. I don't know how it is in other dojos. I do see that there are red and white obis, and there are red obis out there. And like I said, the kids ask about that.
Yeah, the kids, I give them a handbook and a lot of that basic stuff will be in there. We'll wear black belt for a straight black belt first 2 years, the first time, second time. Going into third and fourth, we have a black belt with a red border. Going into fifth and sixth, they usually wear the black and red box belt. Seven and eight, they wear a red belt with I want to say the trim. The trim is black, and for the higher levels, the highest level, 9 and 10, then they can wear red or red with silver or white border. So that's how we classify our belts. But, yeah, I think it's important that the kids do know about that and know the appropriate etiquette that goes along with it.
It's important, you know, Professor, because when they ask about it, even though they get the information, but when they see it, when they see somebody wearing that, it's almost like you can see it in their eyes that that really means something to them. And
right.
You can appreciate that because I guess they must be thinking in their head, wow, you know, what do I got to do to get one of those? I know when I met Sensei Nagel, he was wearing a red and white obi.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the one like the six dans wear. So
right.
That's, yeah, that, to me, that was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, that varies per organization as well as what at what point they put on certain belts. I know since we in my school do not push four belts, it took the kids, what, about 9 months to make yellow belt, and then it would be another 9 months then before they make blue, and another at least 9 months to a year to make green. So we really try to keep a high standard level with our kids' program, but we do teach those things as they go by.
Yeah, they gave us white, two greens, two level of greens, and three level of browns.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to Shodan.
Right,
the way
right.
That's the way he gave us the rank. Now, there are other Ishinru schools that have other color belts, but Sensei just gave us two levels of green and three levels of brown.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way he did it. Of course, you started at white belt.
Right.
You started as a white belt. And then when you got promoted, you got to, you know, go to, you know, a green belt, a green obi. And then you had that for a while. And then when he put a brown belt on you, you had that for a long, long time. You were a brown
right.
belt for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Gotta live the life.
Yeah. Yeah. You were a brown belt for you know, at least maybe 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like because it's three levels. You got to go through Sankyu, Nikyu, and Ikyu. So, all depending on how well you did. Some guys made brown belt pretty quick in my dojo because they were good fighters. But, you know, the most, you know, for the most part, you were brown belt for, you know, a while. You know, and, you know, having to have to go and not just a couple of days a week. You know what I mean? I mean, these guys really, they wanted to, you know, get good, so they worked out a lot. And they're all listed on Sensei's website, and he talks about them, how they would get together and work together and learn. And, you know, for the ones that did, then he saw them along. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, the numbers are, if you get 100 students, maybe, you know, 10 will stick it out, and maybe one will become a black belt.
Absolutely.
And out of that, how many will, you know, stay and go on to teach?
Right.
So, these are some of the things that, you know, we were talking about, and I got a great response on even the way you tie your obi, as
mm-hmm.
to whether or not you are, you know, doing that properly, that when you
That's
fight,
right.
you know, it should not come undone, basically.
That's right. That's all part of the putting on the uniform in the appropriate way.
Yes. And even how to fold it.
That's right.
Yep, because you can use it as a tool as well
That's
as
right.
rope. So everything, you know, has a meaning. And I guess that's the dough. That's the way. And you got to teach the whole, you know, the whole thing. You just can't do the one part of it because then they'll be getting gypped out of it, you know what I mean?
Right, that's true. Very true.
Well, thank you very much. They're about to cut us off, you know, any second, I'm sure.
All right. Have a good night.
Take care. Thanks for calling in.
No problem.
So that wraps up our show for tonight. I'm going to run this right here.
Presented by the Martial Arts History Museum is our first celebrity charity seminar series. On February 24th, you will have the opportunity to work out with such great superstars as Bill Ryusaki, Art Camacho, Leo Fong, Adam James, and Michael Matsuda all in the same day. For more information, visit our website at mamuseum.com. Experience the history, beauty, culture, and tradition of the martial arts at the world's first Martial Arts History Museum. Located in the city of Burbank, California, visitors will enjoy learning how Asian history became part of American history. For more information, visit our website at mamuseum.com.
Sidekick Publications is the newest place for all your martial arts informational needs. My Karate, Introduction to American Wadaru, Martial Arts Guide to Success, History of Japanese Martial Arts, Taizanru Taiho Jitsu, and the new Martial Directory. With martial art master instructors like Michael DePasquale Jr., Joe Miller, Alan Woodman, and many more. Everything for martial arts enthusiasts, techniques, shiatsu, history, all in one place. Available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble's, and bookstores near you. Also available on digital downloads for Kindle and ebook readers. Visit our website at www.sidekickpublication.com and order your books today. Remember, Sidekick Publications, all the action you can read.